This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
And Danny, Dave, and Moore. We are live at Druids Glen, and Jim Moore is experiencing what it's like always in his life. He can't hear.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Well, I can only hear you just through your voice and not the headset here, but these working conditions out here.
This is kind of how your life normally is, though, right? At the age of 61.
No, it's kind of funny because you get that selective hearing, and so like right now I can barely hear you. But it's a beautiful day at Druids Glen. We're out here on the 18th green. We're watching this guy out here in the red shirt chip up to the hole, and he just muffed the chip, and he's really frustrated by it. But 7-10 day out here at Druids Glen. It's good to be here, and yeah, I can't hear, but that's okay.
Do you wish that you had this feature at home? When you go home?
Well, I kind of do, because like what Danny was saying, when you get in your 60s, you start losing your hearing, and then combined with just wanting to tune your wife out on occasion anyway, it's a good combination.
That's what I was getting at.
Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Or the word, I believe, is plausible deniability, right? That's plausible that you could have not heard what was being said
so,
to you.
All right, let me ask you something. When your wife is talking to you, what percent are you actually listening? Is it 100%, 90, 80, 50, or 30, or less?
Well, I always quickly sift through the number of necessary words, because there's lots of unnecessary words that are said. And that's why I always say less words, less words.
In my house, I'm the one that talks too much. And that's probably not a surprise to anyone who listens to this show. My wife does not throw around words casually. And so most of the time when she speaks, I listen, because she's not frivolous with her speech in the way that I am.
So you'd say 100% of the time when Sharon says something, you're listening?
Yes. She'll mumble sometimes, and I'll have to ask her to clarify, which I usually do. And she loves this when I go, instead of asking her to repeat herself, I just mumble in response, which that's a big hit. I tell you, that goes over swimmingly at home. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're here. The news for the Mariners today. It's not going to affect them tonight, but it does affect them this series. Felix Hernandez on the disabled list, suffering an injury to his back, which really goes back a couple starts ago, if you remember the one where he pitched five innings. I think he allowed three runs, and they were happy that he got through five because he wasn't even able to sit down in between innings. He was staying standing because he had tweaked his back. And this essentially is going to buy him, he'll get a full 2 weeks of rest almost, by going on the disabled list, missing one start, and then being eligible to return once the All-Star break concludes.
I forgot about that part. That's one the good news of the timing of his injury, but it's kind of discouraging. First of all, the back is such a man. Remember that song Backstabbers?
I don't.
Yeah.
OJs?
They smile in your face, and all the time they want to take your place. Yeah. They used to made up a song in the locker room. I know, called Backspasms.
Yeah.
Back spasms instead of backstabbers.
They had the chorus in the background.
Yeah, and I remember Grant Fiesel would always sing that, because whenever somebody would get back spasms, like, uh-oh, because you never know what it is. There's always something that could happen there. And I know with pitchers, they're just so delicate, man. And I guess, you know, when you hear a pitcher pulling a groin or a calf muscle, they're such finely tuned instruments. Like we always talk about the guys turning their bodies into a whip, and every last little part of it has to work. But man, it's just, they sure are fragile. Pitchers are I guess, you know, looking at it that way, you can understand why. But I don't know. That's I'm not too encouraged by this. I feel like with Felix's age and the fact that it's his back, that kind of worries me.
Is it really all that concerning, though? I mean, if you're gonna just be cold about it. I mean, on a human personal level, I feel bad for Felix Hernandez. I hope it's minor. I hope that he comes back on the 18th and after the All-Star break, and he's able to pitch again and rejoin the rotation. But on a colder level, do you look at it and go, well, all right, his ERA is over five. Whoever you bring in to replace him for the start on Thursday, whether it's Elias or someone else, probably is going to do as well as Felix would have done, if not better. And so I hate to say it, because I love the King, but it's, you know, it's 2018, and if he's going to be out for one start, you might get a better performance from one of these other guys than what you're getting from Felix Hernandez.
The strategy, like strategically, this doesn't hurt the Mariners at all. If you were going to say, like, hey, one of your five starting pitchers is going to be hurt, or he's going to need some time off, Felix is the one you'd pick, right?
Like without Felix question, it wouldn't even be. I don't. It might even be unanimous.
Yeah.
If you had 100 people vote, which starter do you want to see miss a start? I think Hernandez definitely would win. Maybe not. Who would be second?
The second.
I suppose you're right, but don't you always think that there's always the potential when Felix is on the mound that he is going to, and like Jerry DePoto said at the beginning of the year, it's not fair to expect anything of, you know, anything about him returning to his old form because it's, you know, he just doesn't have the velocity anymore. But don't you feel like there's always a chance for him to have this magical game like he did
five years ago? And I think that that's why it'd be for him pitching in the playoffs. If they get into a series, not in a one game situation, obviously, I think James Paxton is the guy that you would obviously want pitching in that situation. But if I want to still see him in the playoffs because I do think he can summon it for moments. He summoned it. Hey, look, he pitched really well at Yankee Stadium. We all thought he wouldn't. He did, right? Like he looked really good.
Can I compare Felix to my golf game today?
Yes.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Please do.
So I was 2 under after three. 2 under after three holes. That par three, you know, I talk about it on the Druids Glen ads, over water and everything. Yeah, I hit a 20-footer for birdie there. I walked to the fourth tee, and I'm 2 under. So that's you can see stuff like that from Felix.
And you're playing from the blues.
And we're playing from the blues.
Let me try this piece of golf lingo. You're playing from the tips?
No, I wasn't playing from the tips.
The tips
were the black tees.
Oh, okay.
But the blues were the championship tees, and yeah, so you typically, you know, when your score is not that good, you say, well, but I played from the blues, you know. And so everybody goes, oh, well, okay, well, it was a little more difficult. Okay, so that's Felix Hernandez. You know, you get the glimpse of that on occasion where you get the 2 under through three holes. Well, the next 15 holes, I was, let's see, 21 over. So I finished with a 91 today. And sometimes you get that version of Felix, and then sometimes you get in between, too. So I guess what I'm saying is that these days you're looking for par or bogey from Felix, and sometimes you get double and triple bogey, and you don't get the birdies and eagles like you used to get.
I would say that these days I breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief when Felix has a bogey. When Felix pitches five innings and gives up three runs, I look at it and I don't think that's a bad start. I think that that start wasn't awful. It's not good, but it wasn't awful. It gave you a chance to win, and that's really strange. And so when it comes up to him missing a turn in the rotation, and I'm actually all for Roenis Elias taking that spot. I'm all for. I know that maybe Bergman's going to be the guy that was called up. Rumbelow came up today, so it's a bullpen arm. He's not going to take Felix's spot in the rotation, which is scheduled to come Thursday. But, man, if it's I'm all for seeing Roenis Elias take that turn in the rotation. And if not, it's Bergman. And I don't think from a strategic or logistical standpoint that it lessens the chances that the Mariners are going to be able to win that game. That's strange to say about Felix.
Yeah, we'll leave it up to DePoto and Service, but he's the guy I would like to see too, Roenis Elias. I love watching him pitch and just his story. And we've talked about it before. He's one that escaped from Cuba out of Mexico in a speedboat. You know, just his background and his grit, and I just love his curveball. Just such a big sweeping curveball, and he's got a lot of life on his fastball and fun to watch. So, yeah, I mean, I saw a couple rough innings out of him the other day, but I feel like if you put him in the starting position, he might be a good one. You're right about the Felix thing, I guess. He is the guy, the one guy, if you had to pick him, someone being hurt, it would be him. But, I don't know, again, I just I feel bad or worried for him. Just because it took him a while to kind of get to a point and then kind of went back and forth, and now he's injured. And I know it's always tough for players to come back off of an injury.
What do you do if Elias is lights out in that start on Thursday? Like, let's say he goes 8 innings. Now, he's probably not going to be stretched out for 8 innings. Let's say 6 or 7 innings and gives up 1 run, 4 hits.
You pat him on the back. You say, "Great job. Get back in the bullpen."
Is that what you do?
Honestly, it's all about Felix's health. You can't do anything with Felix unless you're really, really ready to cut the cord. In my opinion, I don't think you can move him to the bullpen. I guess you could talk about keeping him on the disabled list longer and saying, "Hey, just go ahead and rest up." But look, you're at a point where you can't change his role any more than you've already changed it. Like, he is no longer your frontline starter. I don't think anybody will have that question of if they get to next season and he's part of the starting rotation. I don't think you're going to get to the point where you think that James Paxton shouldn't start opening day next year when he's still on it. But you can't, you, you can't not have him take his turn in the rotation if he's physically able to pitch. That seems to me, unless you're really going to go to the point of like, okay, we're entering a new phase where whatever we get from him is considered gravy. We're willing to take a complete loss on the, and it's still, I mean, man, you're still looking at more than $30 million that he's owed.
Well, what if Elias does light it up, though? Then they give Felix a spot back and he tanks. And Elias is still pitching well in the bullpen.
You have somebody go take a baseball bat to Felix? No, absolutely not. You start talking to Felix like this. You say, is your back okay? And he's like, yeah, my back's fine. It looks like you might be having some back spasms. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm just fine. No, you got back spasms. You're on the disabled list. Sorry, procedural error.
Don't you think it's minor what we're dealing with here, though?
Heck yeah.
Like, if the All-Star break wasn't coming up, don't you think he'd still make his next start?
I'm not sure about that. Here's what I think is happening, is that you've got a long season, and they look at him and say that he hasn't pitched the complete season the past 2 years, right? He's had injuries. And you're going to also be dealing with the potential consideration of how many innings Marco Gonzalez has. I think this is the first of what we're going to see is a little bit of a judicious or putting a cap. Hey, let's have him take some time. And if he's, and the fact that he couldn't sit down between innings couple starts ago, but you know that physically there is something there, and that they don't want to, there's no sense pushing it right now, because they're going to have to make accommodations and adjustments to multiple starting pitchers. So if Felix is feeling that way right now, here's a chance to get some easy rest.
You know, whenever I think about Felix and how they're trying to sort of coerce him into being in a different role and think about the way he pitches differently and everything, we talked about this yesterday, Danny, how Service and DePoto got Colome to come here and be a setup guy instead of a closer, even though he was the number one saves last year in the American League. You convinced Span to come here and have a good attitude. I mean, obviously those two were traded for, but you know, they were able to get them to be productive when Span at the end of his career would probably have loved nothing more than to stay in Tampa and play in his hometown. And then D. Gordon, who's a Golden Glove second baseman, they get him to come here and have a good attitude about being out in center field. But I always wonder about Felix. I always wonder if, you know, it's going the same with him. Like, they've convinced those guys to do that kind of thing. But I wonder how that's going with Felix, what the conversations are like between Scott Service and Felix Hernandez about what they think he is as a pitcher and how he needs to change and adjust his strategy for the rest of his career.
Yeah, and that's, I definitely have a question. How much is Felix acting on the advice he's getting?
Right.
How much is he?
Don't you feel like he's bought in? I mean, Shannon talks about it, and I didn't sense that he had completely bought in, maybe even early this season, certainly not last season. But don't you feel like he's at least adapted or at least tried to embrace what they want him to do?
Yeah, I think he's tried different things.
Yeah.
I do think he's tried different things.
But do
I
you
agree.
Think in his
I
mind,
don't think
do
he's
think,
doing it. I don't think he's doing it defiantly. I think it's just that he can't get it done.
Do you think in his mind that he still feels like he's, you know, the king from 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah.
There are times, yeah. And I don't want him to not feel that way. I want him to feel that he is invincible. I mean, you got to have that confidence in yourself. You don't want him thinking that, like, well, I'm only 2/3 of what I was 5 years ago, but maybe 2/3 will be able to get it out. You want him to follow the game plan that the pitching coach and the catcher are outlining for him. And I think I heard him say how much he trusts Mike Zunino, and I think that that's a really good sign. That's what you want him. You want him fully committed to believing that that approach is going to work for him. And I think that there are times that he's thought that the only thing that's been wrong with me has been the injuries that I've suffered the past couple of years, that it's just a matter of health. I wonder, I think that.
Yeah, but doesn't he? I mean, he sees the gun readings like everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to know that, oh, man, I can't throw 94, 95 anymore.
You're right. He does know that. But does he know why opposing batters aren't as willing to chase his changeup? Like, does he make that connection and that concession? Because, I mean, that's one of the really big things is his curveball. And I think that this is something that Stottlemyre and Service have talked to him about a ton. His curveball is really his most effective pitch, and it used to be his changeup. It's changeup because whether you call it a changeup or a split finger, I mean, there were people that were convinced it was a split finger, and you'd chase it, and it wasn't a strike. Mm-hmm. And you had to honor the fastball, and I think some of the fact that he doesn't have the velocity on the fastball, they stopped swinging at his changeup. Like, and it's not a strike, so that creates a bad situation for a pitcher. And I think he's struggled to adjust to that reality and accept that the changeup is not as devastating and is not as effective a pitch for him, and he's got to learn to pitch off his curveball more. But he's tried, And it's, look, it's just he's survived for a long, long time on being extraordinary as far as his stuff and his arm, and that people, he didn't have to game plan for an opposing hitter. He had to take his approach, and now he's got to have a little bit of chess match, a little more of a chess match with the hitters, and I think that's been tougher for him. I look at this as it's a great opportunity for him to get some extra rest, and it's not going to cost the Mariners anything. You're not going to have a lesser chance at winning in Anaheim on Thursday because Felix isn't ready for there. It is Danny Davenport. It's 7:10 day. We got a couple tickets to give away. We're out here. People starting to work their way up the 18th. Druids Glen, our day, which is this is a really fun day, a chance for us to kind of get to see a lot of the people that make it possible for us to do this show. So this is going to be really fun out here today.
Yeah, this is cool. I love seeing all the people. I had more than a few people come up and talk about how much they listen to the station. I was down with some Acton's Roofing people down there today, and almost all of them listened to the station, driving around and giving out bids and doing projects and stuff. So really cool. I've had come a long ways, this station has, and just having listeners come up and tell you, because a lot of times we just sit here and yap, and you go, I wonder if anybody's listening. Do you ever think that?
All the time.
Yeah. Maybe nobody's listening.
No.
But people are listening.
There are people that are out there. We had Jim Moore was told, was it this week or last week? Somebody came up and told Jim, I listened to you while I was growing up.
Yeah, that was a new one. No, I used to hear, like,
was that a tomato who said that?
Yeah, I used to hear, I read you growing up, which I thought, well, okay, that's cool, because I worked at the PI for 25 years. But I think I've been at the station for 8 years. And, yeah, a guy that just started there at the station said, I listened to you while I was growing up.
Yeah. And Jim said,
I've been old enough. I'm old enough now to have, like, you know, affected people in two different careers, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that's... Sounds like a multimedia sensation there, Jim Morris.
No,
he's affected people in two different careers.
We really like ourselves.
No, wait, forget that. I'm really.
I found two ways to touch my morons.
No. Those are courtesy laughs back here. I need more support from the crew.
Oh, those are belly laughs.
Yeah.
They're laughing.
All right. No, okay. Speaking of coming a long way, so I'm going to try to transition here.
I wanted to talk about you touching your morons.
No, I don't want to talk about that. Speaking of coming a long ways, I want to know how the Acton Roofing's ad went and whether you were like stiff as a board in last year's ad. Have you progressed to like being a little more of a hipster on TV in a commercial?
Well, I'll never be a hipster.
Well, whatever. I mean, at least a little more casual.
I don't know, Jim. You'll just have to wait and see.
It's not, you know, hey.
Bobby's good.
Hey, Bobby, I played linebacker, too. It's not one of those this year. It's
that was 2 years ago, Jim.
That was when my
acting career was just in the budding stage.
Dave's become more of a method actor.
Yeah. I do say that. Like, what's my motivation here? Those kinds of things. Yeah. It went just fine, Jim. Somebody asked me, how much do you get paid for that? I said, it's not enough to make up for the crap that I take from my friends when they watch that commercial.
Yeah, plus I was disappointed you were on time, too. You said yesterday you might be late for the show.
Yeah. Oh, well, Jim, I had you in mind. I thought, gee whiz, I don't want to get any heat from a guy who can never show up to his seat on time when the show starts.
That's pretty rich of me busting your chops after I left early last night to go watch my kids playing a baseball game.
Yeah.
No, they lost 5-3.
Oh, was that a close one?
Was that a playoff game?
It was a heartbreaker there at Kent Memorial. Yeah, it was a playoff to get into the playoff, and so they're done now. So we have to find things for our kids to do besides sit there with the controls and play Fortnite all day.
There would be this, and we also have some news today. You have a very specific voice you use for Dave Wyman teeing off with a 3-wood.
I do.
Can we hear it?
The voice of nice 3-wood there, Dave. Way to go. Way to lay up. That's percentage golf. Yeah,
one. On this last hole, hole number 18, Brady Henderson, 710sports.com emeritus, and now a beat reporter for the ESPN.com, covers the Seahawks. Does
beautiful
a great
swing.
Job. He hit a 4-iron off the tee.
Yeah. Well, he explained his logic to me afterwards, and it made sense because 18 here at Druids Glen, there's water left, and you bring water into play with a driver, and so...
He hit a 4-iron off the tee, Jim.
I know. I didn't like it either when he told me, but I couldn't really say anything because, again, Danny, from the blue tees, I hit driver thinking, well, the water's not in play from the blues. Well, I'm so long at 61 that I put it in the water anyway.
And so. like me, Brady Henderson also beat Jim in his score, teeing off with a 4-iron.
He did.
And me with a 3-wood, because he shot an 84.
And Brady took a 5 on this hole, and I finished with a 7.
It's time for us to take 2.
Take 2!
Guys, some good Mariners news.
Gene Segura is currently in first place in the American League All-Star Game final vote standings with just under 22 hours remaining.
This is a good reflection on Mariner Fan Nation, right? That they got activated, responded to all the incentives to go out and vote. Because Seattle's not the biggest town. They don't have the most national fans, yet he's successfully beating Giancarlo Stanton right now. And Benintendi.
Yeah.
And Andrelton Simmons. Like, all these different guys. That's a great sign for the enthusiasm for Mariners fans.
How do you think it works? I mean, do you go to MLB.com and then just go to the link and then just with your index finger just keep clicking?
Enter. Yeah.
Who do you think's voted the most out of 710?
It's clearly Lydia.
Yeah, Lydia.
Oh, Lydia. Yeah. She's a baseball nut, and she's into technology.
Yeah, she's super active. So,
well,
I
at what point are you nuts? Like, certifiably nuts? Is it like more than 100 votes where you're kind of crazy, or
I would say
500?
More than 50.
More than 50? Yeah, more than 50, yeah. You got some questions about what's going on?
We should have challenged our listeners to vote 710 times.
Oh, yeah.
On 710 day for Gene Segura. No, it's cool also how they worked this thing out with the, I wonder how that came together with Brandon Belt for the San Francisco Giants.
Jeans and Belt.
I think it was born out of a mind like Danny's. That's how that partnership came about.
Pure corniness.
Why did Dave bring that up when he was ripping it yesterday? You and I liked it, and yet he brought it up.
I just thought it wasn't that funny, and it was kind of silly. But then I saw it started to work, so I changed my mind.
Oh, did you?
Hey, if we get Gene Segura in there, I just didn't think it was that funny, and I didn't think it would catch fire. But then I saw it on a couple of different websites that, yeah, the whole Gene Belt is working. So,
how many times have we voted combined, including you, Curtis?
I put in about 20.
Oh, you put 20 votes in?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Dave, I'm guessing you have the same number as me.
Zero.
Oh!
Zero.
That's terrible. I realized that I really wish that somebody named Poole had been a candidate, because then you could have had Gene Poole.
Gene Poole.
All right, see, that's pretty funny.
Damn it!
I laughed at Danny's corny joke. But no, it's cool that he's getting... I didn't think that... You'd think with those markets, New York and Boston, that those guys would definitely dominate. But like you said yesterday, Danny, maybe all this technology up here in Seattle, somebody devise some system, so
I
you know, like a robot or whatever that'll just continue to, not an actual robot with like metal arms, but I mean like a bot that you put, is that
digital internet?
I would love to hear Dave's visual of what an online bot is, like on Twitter, like what you think that would look like.
Yeah. You ever seen Lost in Space?
Yeah.
Okay, that robot. It's got like the arms that looks like a dryer venting hose, you know, and it's just sitting there at a computer pressing enter.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger!
Yeah. Danger, danger, yeah, there you go.
Oakland shut out Houston in the opener of their four-game series on Monday, 2-0, trimming Houston's lead on the Mariners to 3 games, but narrowing Seattle's lead on the A's to 6.
Bad news, man.
You think it's bad news?
The A's worry me.
Ah!
You know what Houston... maybe they're not going to catch him. I still, Danny, you and I both think that they can catch him in the AL West. But Oakland has always just been a thorn in their side. And I feel like, you know, so they won today, right? In the first game.
Last night.
So yeah, I heard Salk this morning going, they won one quarter of the way there. And maybe it's not time to panic, but I would much rather have Houston smoke Oakland than the other way around.
You guys feel like the Mariners can overtake Houston at some point. What's your biggest reason for feeling that way?
Then I think Houston is due for some injuries. Like, I think, I don't think Houston's hit adversity yet. I think that they've had a very smooth road. All of their starters have remained healthy for the most part. They've got some, the only struggles that you could say, Springer hasn't had a great year. Their bullpen, it is a little rocky.
Their bullpen, they just switched closers. Giles is now their setup guy. They move Hector Rondon into the closer role.
I think that they will have a skid. I do think that something will happen. I don't think that it's going to be a smooth second half of the season.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you on that, because that's the thing when you look at like a championship run by any team. I don't want to say that there's luck, but there's good fortune that goes along with it. You avoid injuries. You don't have the year the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. I mean, I guess KJ Wright went down at one point. But other than that, I mean, you have to have some good fortune. And they've had that. And I feel like how long can that last? And then the other thing is this team has just been very timely with hitting and pitching. And I think that they can And not only that, timeliness as far as how guys' careers are coming together. Look at Ryan Healy, hit 25 home runs last year, and we were sitting there going, man, if he can do that again, you know, I don't know if he can. He's already at 18. You know, the things you're getting out of Haniger, I don't know that Segura will ever have a better year, batting 340. I mean, we're halfway there, but still, I just feel like the timeliness of how this is coming together, that's the reason why they can catch Houston.
It is Danny David Moore. The fact that Gene Segura is in first place in the final vote is fantastic, but there's better signs about the Mariners' future from how people have rallied around Gene. We'll explain that next.
Celebrating 710-day live from Druids Glen Golf Course. This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
It is 710 day. We're here at Druids Glen. We see a foursome approaching the final green here for us. 710 day, one of our favorite days of the year. Opportunity for you guys to get cheap golf, and we'll come by and say hello to us as you finish your round that's here. I realized this yesterday, seeing the picture on Shannon's Twitter account. It was of all the Mariners getting ready to board their flight down to Anaheim for this series against Los Angeles, the Angels, which begins tonight. First pitch, 7.07 p.m. right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Pregame show will start after we're done at 6 o'clock. They're all wearing Sen Segura T-shirts. And if there was any concern that you had about Gene Segura not being chosen to the All-Star game, like any concern, it would be that he would be deflated or discouraged by that. I actually think, and now that we know that Gene Segura is in first in the final vote, like this has the opportunity to be an even cooler thing. Like he's got to feel great about how his teammates have rallied around him and the recognition that they've given to the contributions that he's made. Like, regardless of whether or not it does end up being chosen for the game and does end up holding on and winning that vote, like, that's got to feel a really cool thing to see your teammates. Nelson Cruz offered an autographed bat to somebody who voted for him within the next hour. Zunino, Ryan Healy, all these things. All the things that the team has done to promote him, like, that has got to make up for any disappointment or disillusionment he felt at not getting chosen.
Do you see Edgar in the picture, too? He's got, like, a red blazer on, and he's holding a sign that says it. He's got the little smiling Gene Segura face in the middle. I got to have one of these T-shirts, man, because I love collecting T-shirts. But these are all superstars. Like, Edgar, you know, we think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Nelson Cruz, I mean, all of these guys that are supporting him. This team is all in, man, and it's you see a little bit of that in other places. And look, we're not around them. I saw the other day, who's the goofy kid in San Francisco that plays right field?
Hunter Pence.
Hunter Pence and some other player were doing like this big time wrestling thing, and they had Brandon belts, like a title belt, and they did something on Twitter. So that was kind of cool. But man, your whole team supporting you and a bunch of superstars doing that. I mean, this could not speak better for a team.
I was just going to say, that's coming up later in Sweeping the Dial at 4:45.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Danny David Moore.
Cat out of the bag. Sorry. Anyway. Yeah.
I hear the cat again?
You hear that enough at home, don't you?
Yeah, I do hear that on occasion. There's only two cats roaming the house now.
Really?
Just two now?
Yeah.
Cat City has become, there's been a population decrease.
Yeah, it's more like a Catville. Cat City. Yeah, so two left town.
Welcome to Catville, population two.
Two went down to L.A.
Two went to L.A., one died.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Nelly.
Poor Nelly.
Yeah, but what were we talking about?
Gene Segura.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, the T-shirt you want to get to add to your collection.
Well, it's also, you know, you see these around the league. This is how Chris Archer, who's a superstar, and he was making this big campaign for the kid down there.
Blake Snell,
and who's from up here. And, you know, so it's always cool when you see guys that sort of relegate themselves to, you know, supporting someone else. And usually you think of the egos on the team and everything, and a lot of guys thinking, well, why aren't I going? But for them to all support Gene like that just shows how close this team is. If you see this picture, it can't not – you'll smile looking at this picture.
It looks like something a group of kids would do. Like, that's honestly what it looks like.
When you think about it, most of them are kids still. We forget that.
They are, but
I mean, you know, when you're in your 20s.
Yeah, but
You're talking about little kids.
No, but that gets lost. Like, it honestly does. And look, people, we talk about it and say, oh, it's a business. And it is. It's serious stuff, and there are big-time egos involved, and you're talking about millions of dollars and trips and those sort of things. Like, I've been on the road with teams, and you definitely – some of that innocence gets lost in it being staying at four-star hotels and that sort of thing, where you kind of become insulated from – not just the people that are following the game, but the people you play with, and you hear stories about teams that are 25 guys and 25 cabs after the game, that you can compartmentalize yourself as a professional athlete and have very little to do with the guys that play. And then you see this picture where they're all wearing the same T-shirt before they get on a plane, and you realize that, like, that ethic is not that far removed of stuff I'm sure Mikey and Stevie are doing with their all-star team as they're kind of gathering around and making these runs and playing in these tournaments.
No, it's fun. I think you make a good point, Danny, with in the end, when we look back on the 2018 All-Star game, and if Segura, whether Segura makes it in or not, and right now he's the leading vote-getter in this final vote, it might be a good thing that he has gotten snubbed like this, because it's rallied the troops. You see how much love that his teammates have, and you guys have talked about that, but it might be one of those things where he really feels appreciated, and clearly, you know, they're seeing the stats and they feel like he's snubbed, and they're supporting their teammate. And so this just seems like a win-win in the end, even if he doesn't make it.
I think he's going to feel better about his season and what he has done than if he just made the All-Star game and as one of the straight out selections on Sunday. I think he's going to end up feeling better about himself and about his connection to his teammates because of the way this has happened. And I think that's really cool.
You know, and also for a guy that deserves it, I mean, you know Gene Segura's story. He lost an infant child. He was in Milwaukee. He got hit by a bat, right? Who was it that was swinging in?
It was Ryan Braun.
It was Braun, that's right. As if there wasn't another reason to not like that guy. But, yeah, he was taking a practice swing, hits Gene in the face, and you can still see the scar on his face. Then he most importantly, he loses an infant child, reaches out to Robinson Cano, and so he's had it kind of rough, and his career was spiraling. And just because, you know, he couldn't put his mind around that, and Robinson helped him out, and now just, you know, I'm happy for him that this is where he's at right now, considering what 4 or 5 years ago where he was, like, at the depths, and now here he's got his whole team supporting him.
It's Danny Davenport. We're here at Druids Glen. We're going to be giving out two tickets to the Mariners, the fireworks game, I believe, July 20th. The fireworks set to Pearl Jam. We'll be giving away those tickets at some point here during our show. We got the Professor John Clayton coming up at 4 o'clock. Mike Margema, who retired from baseball, he's going to join us at 4:30. But up next, the A's beat the Astros yesterday. Is that a good thing for the Mariners? We'll discuss that next.
Celebrating 710 Day live from Druids Glen Golf Course. This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
We got two tickets to give away to the Mariners. It's to the fireworks night, their next fireworks night, which is July 20th. It's 710 Day. Should we take the 710th caller? Is that what we should do for Matt Nelson?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We should do that.
How do you feel about that, Matt Nelson?
No, I love Matt.
He hates all of us.
He does. We're going to figure out exactly how we'll do that. Stay tuned to that. We've also got the Professor John Clayton coming up. The A's beat the Astros last night. The A's are they're torrid, right? You win 17 or 21 games. I believe that's their mark right now. They are on fire. And I say keep knocking down the Astros. Absolutely keep knocking them down, because that will be the Mariners. I want to raise the stakes here. The Mariners, their best shot, I think it's more likely that they would win the division over the Astros than that the A's would walk them down and potentially edge them out of the playoffs. Between those two scenarios, I think it's
likely. One more time. It would be more likely.
I think it's more likely that the Mariners could pass the Astros in the American League West than it is that the A's could run down the Mariners.
Well, that's, I hadn't thought of it like that. No, Oakland's not going to catch the Mariners. They're not going to catch, are they? I've said this before, but do you really sit there and think, man, watch out for the A's?
They've got some great young players. I love their third baseman. Like Chapman.
No, I do too. I like him too, but do you really sit there thinking, I think it's...
They've got two great, the end of their bullpen is awesome. Now, the end of the Mariners bullpen, especially with the way Colome has looked for about the past week, that could be every bit the match. But I think it's Trevino and Trinan. Mm-hmm. Trinan, who's the A's all-star, it's a really good back end of the bullpen. Manaea is a top-tier starter. I mean, he's certainly, he is to them what James Paxton is to the Mariners. They're a good team, but they've won 17 to 21 games, and they're still, what, six games back of the Mariners?
Yeah, it reminds me of the Moneyball run there, and look at Jed Lowry. I mean, and Jed Lowry is, he's batting 288 now, and that's by far the most, but that's not the most amazing thing, because last year he was 277. He's already hit 16 home runs. That equals his best total. So that, I just feel like there maybe is something going on there that's maybe a little bit magical. He's got 62 RBIs. And, you know,
he replaced Torres in the All-Star game today.
Oh, good, because he has never made, I think he's a Stanford guy, if I'm not mistaken.
He is a Stanford player.
Yeah, so he is a guy that's never made, I don't think he's made it as an All-Star. I don't know, I just feel like there's something going on there, and the A's have always given them a hard time. And so I feel like, I guess I'm surrendering more to the fact that I think, you know, Houston's going to win, that they're probably going to win the AL West, and I just don't want the Oakland A's sneaking up there and, you know, causing trouble with the Mariners, and I don't know, they just always have, and that maybe is not a good reason going forward because it's a different team and everything, but still, it worries me.
And by the way, you guys were both giving me a hard time yesterday about my premise of that foul territory in Oakland hurting the A's, and I did some research yesterday, as you know, Danny, and found that the A's scored 3.7 runs at home and 5.5 on the road. And so it's in keeping with my premise about all that foul territory there hurting them as a hitting, you know, as hitting. And then on the road where there's less foul territory, they're scoring more runs as a result.
How does that number reflect that? Where in that research does it say that it's because of that foul territory?
Yeah, that's a little glitch in the research that I'll try and refine. But I think that it does play a part. How else would you explain the A's being so much better on the road, scoring nearly two runs more a game on the road than at home?
They enjoy being in an actual major league facility, and the fact that they're not worried about the toilets backing up at the Oakland Coliseum frees them up to be able to, like, they
well, what's that ballpark? I know it's known as a dump, but is it known as a hitter's park or a pitcher's park?
I don't
know, Curtis?
I think it's pretty amorphous.
I think it's more known as a pitcher's ballpark, though.
Houston's better.
Foul territory.
Houston's better on the road. Boston's better on the road.
Well, why do you have to water down my research by doing something? I mean, you could have just told me that off the air.
Well, it is interesting, though, that Jim, that when the A's play there, there's more foul territory for their hitters to have their balls, and that when the A's are in the field, there must be a different amount. Oh, wait, no, it's the same for both teams.
It is the same for both teams.
So why wouldn't...
Well, just, okay, the visiting team might only score 3.7 runs a game to it in Oakland.
So why would that explain why they lose more often and don't have as good a record? If they allow fewer runs and also score fewer runs, shouldn't it be the same rate?
Yeah. Perhaps.
Unless the A's have
it's
a real...
It's getting a little complicated for me, because I had a couple Coors Lights out there this morning.
Hey, Jim Moore, Coors Light drinker
yeah,
here.
I know. Just in case we ran that ad, you know, I wanted to be genuine with
That's exactly right. You were being honest.
Yeah, well, can I offer an explanation that, you know, maybe this is maybe better than Jim's, is that when you're not at home and you're on the road, you're not taking out the garbage. You're not having to change the baby's diapers. You can just be around your buddies. You can go out and have a good time, all wear Send Segura t-shirts and, you know, go drinking beer and stuff like that and be around your teammates. And, well, maybe not the beer drinking part, because that might lead to hangovers. But, you know, you're more concentrated. You don't have to worry about all the things that go on at home when you're staying at home.
You don't have to pretend you don't hear your wife when she's talking
that
to you.
That too, yeah.
That would be one of the benefits of being away.
I love going on the road. I just felt like, you know, you're around your teammates. You know, everything is about football. You're not making your bed. You don't have anything to do except concentrate on football, and maybe that's the explanation.
Did you feel that making your bed was a big hurdle, like you were liberated from that burden?
It's just one of many chores that you have to do when you're at home, especially if you have a pregnant wife, which I did.
You should always make your bed, right? Like, that's the sign of being an adult.
I've heard you say that before, but I don't get the correlation between being an adult and making a bed or having an unmade bed.
Yeah, I will honestly say, like, at the points when I've struggled with depression the most, like, one of the things that's helped me get a foothold about it is make your bed every day.
Yeah, there's a Navy SEAL who has a whole, like, commencement address that he did for University of Texas, and that was, like, the number one thing. there was like 10 things, and number one was make your bed in the morning.
Make your bed.
Yeah.
It's Danny David Moore. We got the professor, John Clayton. We've made our bed. Now we'll have to lie in it next.